It's not revisionist because, much like War Games or even Daleks in Color, the original still exists.
Chris Carter has returned to The X-Files, I Want to Believe, almost 20 years after the film was originally released, and created a new cut, one that he says is closer to the film he originally wanted to make. But when a director goes back to a film years later, is the result necessarily more authentic? And what happens to everybody else's contribution to something that was, after all, a collaborative production? This week, James McLean and Brian Terranova have both seen Carter's new version. I haven't, which, as you're about to discover, puts me in the unusual position of mostly sitting back and listening. I'm Christian Corley, and this is Castabrus.
So, some people might know, X-Files I Want to Believe, was a show, a film, 2008, of the X-Files franchise. Recently, Chris Carter says, the conversation I think he had someone at 20th Century, that they wanted to, that maybe he did a tweak and edit a bit. It feels very much like a vanity project in the same way that maybe Lucas had a vanity project with the special editions in the back end of the 20th Century, roughly around the same time as the Doctor Who night. But yeah, so Chris Carter's done they've done a director's cut of I Want to Believe, which has been released on Friday. And what we thought was interesting, because I've watched it, Brian's watched it, what was interesting is that the director's cut, it's actually shorter than the original cut. The edits themselves don't actually change the movie, unlike, as we were saying, you'll find quite often a special edition does change the movie to some degree. It perhaps changes the direction in some way or another. This just really is a slightly tonal. I think Carter said that he felt that there was too much of Mulder and Scully in it, which took away from the harder horror of the film. And he wanted to emphasize the horror and he wanted to bring that into light. So a lot of it's just like very tweaked for pacing, a little more gore, a little less Mulder and Scully. And I just thought it's just quite interesting to have that as your, I don't know about you, Brian, but I mean, I must admit, when I heard there was a director's cut, I kind of got more excited that it's not that I wanted to see more. I'm not someone who just like, I know we've talked about this before, needs to see the scene in Return of the Jedi where Luke's building his lightsaber in a cave. Yeah, it's cool. Yeah. I understand why it's not in the film. I get it. It's obviously a choice, but I get that choice. But I'd kind of thought I'd see more to this film, which would perhaps make it feel a little more coherent in some ways, where I felt at the back end, it felt a little rushed. But there wasn't any of that.
Okay.
Well, how did you feel about it?
Well, when I first heard him talk about it, it was actually on David Duchovny's Fail Better podcast. I think that's when everybody first, when it first came to light that it was happening. As he put it, it was supposed to be a Frankenstein type horror story, that pressure was put on him to drop the rating to PG-13 and amp up the Mulder-Scully relationship thing, because a large portion of the X-Files fan base is what is known as shippers. Actually, they created the term shippers for the X-Files. If you've ever heard that for any other fandom, it was created for the X-Files. Yeah, the X-Files fans created it for Mulder and Scully. So in his opinion, the way that his recollection is, it was a more horror-based film that he had to dial back to get a PG-13 rating, and he had to amp up Mulder and Scully's relationship stuff. I don't know which part of that is true, but all I can say is my take on having seen the new director's cut, which is actually called X-Files, I Want to Believe, Vrach Frankenstein, which just means Dr. Frankenstein. My opinion was it was actually very good. However, I didn't see the need to cut out the Mulder Scully stuff that he felt the need to cut out. That wasn't what I ever had an issue with the film. I'll tell you why I thought it was good. There's a few things that I thought was really good about it. If you remember in the original version, James, you might remember, Christian, I don't know if you've seen this movie. I think we talked, you probably haven't. But when Mulder and Scully first get back to the FBI, they see a photo of George Bush and then J. Edgar Hoover, and then they play the X-Files sting, the music, as a joke, like, oh, this is where we are today, these two weirdos kind of thing. And it was a joke that just didn't land. Whether you like George Bush or not, the joke just didn't land. There's another part in the movie. There's a premise in the movie so that you have an idea, Christian, and the audience who might not be into this. It's called the new version is called Vrash Frankenstein because there is a doctor in the film who is trying to save someone's life by literally removing their head and attaching it to another body that is not diseased, what this character is dying of. And we don't actually learn what they're dying of, but it basically there was this scientist that Chris Carter had met who actually successfully removed the head of a monkey and attached it to a body of another monkey in real life. Supposedly it worked, limited amount of time it worked, but he successfully did it, and that became the basis of this. So it's a Frankenstein kind of horror story because women are being abducted to kind of give this person a life back since they're losing their life. I've lost how I've gotten there now all of a sudden. But so there's a line in the film where Billy Connolly's character, they learn that the first FBI agent that was abducted is dead. But Billy Connolly's character tells Mulder and Scully, who already know this FBI agent is dead, that she's still alive. And there's a line from Scully in the movie when she realizes, oh my God, this scientist who transplanted in the movie, it was a dog's head onto another dog's body, but it actually made it a double-headed dog and it still lived and survived. She realizes, I understand why Father Joe thinks this FBI agent is alive. And she calls Mulder, but has to leave him a message, long story short. And in her message, the thing that always bugged me is she says, Mulder, you have to call me back. I understand. The FBI agent's alive. And I'm like, okay, you know she's dead because you found her head. Father Joe believes she's alive because of his psychic connection. He understands she's alive. Why would Scully, this educated doctor who put together why that Father Joe may believe that she's alive, why would she say the FBI agent is alive, knowing full well they found her head? You know she's dead, right? So I've always hated that line. Carter removed that line. And it works so much better without that line. And there's one other thing that he removed that I was just, when Mulder gets really jazzed about helping with this case, Scully tells him, you need to stop looking for your sister. And it felt jarring in the movie at this point, especially since he knows by this point, spoiler for anybody who didn't watch the series, his sister's dead. So removing those three things made a world of difference for me. He tightened some scenes, he extended other scenes, and he re-edited the music in such a way that I personally felt the movie felt more tense. It was scarier in a tense way. It wasn't scarier in a horror way, the way that he claims it is. I don't see where he's getting the R rating that he claims to get to. The oddity there is that there's a scene in the original version of the movie. Actually, it might be the original director's cut of the movie because this movie now has three versions, where Mulder finds the body of the FBI agent and he throws a tarp off of her and you can see her bare chest. In this new version, when he throws the tarp off, there's now wires that are covering the bare chest. And I'm like, that would be the one thing I can imagine that would get you an R rating in this version that you've done because the gore doesn't really, there wasn't enough gore to justify that. In my opinion, I think the edit worked really well. I think the shippers who are the most vocal out there are really tanking it because the Mulder Scully shipper stuff got cut out. And I don't think that should have been cut out.
But at the
But I
same,
think the edit was, go ahead.
but that I think is what's really interesting about it is that it's removed, but it's not erased. I
No,
think
by no means. Yeah.
that's the difference. If he'd actually decided, which he could have, like if he has also hadn't done two series since, okay, I actually don't like the relationship here. I'm going to nix it. I'm going to remove any scene when they're in the bed. I'm going to remove any scene of intimacy, any sort of personal intimacy, and just have it like the TV series. Then I perhaps sort of, and then sort of say, yeah, I did this cut because I don't believe they'd have a relationship. I can understand why the shippers would go, that's unreasonable. But I think what's interesting about this director's cut is it is just a reorientation on how you view the same events, essentially. Except maybe, arguably, like the three cuts that you made, he made the ones that you said. I suppose in your head, you'd like to I, for obvious reasons, would like to erase in a weird way from the story that they he, she never did say I.
Yeah. Oh,
So I suppose there
I've
is a
wanted
little
to
bit
erase
of it.
that for years. Yeah.
Yeah,
Because
but so
it just doesn't make sense.
but I think it's quite nice. It's one of those situations which, unlike going back to what Christian said before we started this, before we started recording, say take an example of the War Games, where there is a oh, I don't know, some people probably might sort of say it hasn't changed, but I would say it probably has. That version does very clearly say it's the master who is
Oh
the
yeah, no, they absolutely
watch.
changed.
There's
Yeah.
no doubt about
Yeah.
that, really. While the original doesn't. So while it never says this is now the canonical one, it is a a version of the same event, there is a change. While in this, it's as you say, it is a revisioning of authorship, which I think is just really interesting. While the Star Wars to me was not a revision of authorship, really. I know in some ways he argued it was. I don't think it was. But this feels like an unusual and rare circumstance for someone just generally wanting to retweak a film to how they
Yeah.
would like it to be, and not really for commercial reasons. Arguably, maybe there were commercial reasons so far as the timing. This comes out
Yeah.
very soon, with the new X-Files thing going on, which I don't get the impression from what he said he has much involvement in, which I'm not sure whether he's
No.
happy about or not. I don't think he is happy about that. And this is a way of him trying to control some of his IP or keep it alive
Yeah.
as it is. But ultimately, it seems a very author-led director's cut. Actually, we could almost argue a proper director's cut, which you don't tend to get.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And going back to what you said, it's not revisionist because much like War Games or even Daleks in Color, which arguably, while it didn't necessarily change the history of the show, it cut out a lot of scenes, right? The original still exists. Whereas Star Wars is more of a revisionist because Lucas chose to keep the originals away from us. Now we're getting A New Hope coming back to the theaters next year, is it? For the 50th anniversary. So we're going to get to see that. Hopefully we'll get to see the others. Hopefully they'll sell us the original back on home media finally again. But he didn't take this from us. The beautiful thing is that if you don't like this new edit of I Want to Believe, you still have the original and the original director's cut. My thing is, I really liked this version because, like I said, I personally feel it felt tenser, scarier tenser, not a scarier horror. I felt it was more coherent. There were actually two things in the film that I remembered going, did this just suddenly click with me now, or did this click with me because of this edit? Right? And one of those things actually relates to the FBI agent's body. Like, you actually, in this edit, you understand the character who kind of drags that body and Mulder almost to his death at the end of the story. You understand where he got that body from now. We knew it was a body. We knew it was a body that was taken and he was disposing of, because there were many bodies that they were disposing of throughout the movie. But they actually, because the cut was a little bit longer, you now understand where that body came from. Likewise, there's an interesting thing. There's a point when Mulder goes to this Mulder and Whitney, Agent Whitney, go to this local pool after the latest victim has been kidnapped. In the original edit, they're looking for a sign-in sheet, and the guy's telling them, "Yeah, I keep it, but I throw it out every day. I don't have it." So Mulder runs into the ladies' locker room. When he goes in the original edit, he goes in there, and you stay on the guy, and the guy goes, "Does he not know that's the ladies?" Right? The new edit, Mulder goes in and the camera stays with Mulder as he goes and searches the ladies' locker room. And you hear that guy's line from the other room, now from a distance, does he not know that's the ladies? And what it leads to, which shows, and I don't understand why, how this could in any way relate to being a forced cut, unless they didn't like the fact that Mulder went into a ladies' room. It leads to this transition into Dr. Frankenstein's lab. So Mulder goes across this dark locker room and then it just pans across into Dr. Frankenstein's scene. And it was a beautiful transition and it's only in this new edit. It's not in the other two. And that's one of the things that I thought, like, you know what, you can see that Chris did try to tighten this up and make it a more coherent story. There's a story that he also tells, Mulder and Scully's final kiss at the end that gets removed. He says, you know what, like, you can tell how much these two love each other and how much these two care for each other, even without that kiss. And he says that scene still works to me tremendously. without that kiss. This is him speaking now. And when I watched it, I was like, oh man, like, I just know everybody's going to be so mad he removed the kiss. I know it, just, I know the shippers, I know how it's going to go. And I'm not a shipper, but I have no problem with the Mulder Scully relationship. I think it seemed to evolve naturally. I think it's fine. I like it, right? So I thought, like, you should have just left it in. But I have to agree with him. That moment worked. When he panned and you don't get the kiss and it transitions to Scully and surgery, it still worked. Yeah. It still held that same emotional impact. What didn't work is the first time you see Mulder and Scully in bed, he cut out a scene where Scully comments that Mulder's beard is scratchy. Oh, you've got a scratchy beard kind of thing. And she's being kept up at night because of this case, this child patient that she has. And she's like, you know, basically he's like, can't you sleep? And she's like, no, I can't sleep. I've got a scratchy, you know, oh, he kisses her. Oh, you that scratchy beard kind of thing. You see this moment of cute playfulness and it's cut. But what happens now is Scully is just telling Mulder a little bit about the case. And the next thing you see is Mulder go, oh, now I can't sleep. And it's like, that doesn't work so well in your tighter edit because we never got any indication that Scully couldn't sleep before. Like that's a case where you tried to cut out some relationship stuff, but the edit didn't work because now it's weird. And you've also cut out the catalyst for Mulder shaving his beard. He's got two, he's going full Mulder mode. Like, oh, this case has got me pumped and primed now, but also the woman that he loves just told him your beard is scratchy. And he's kind of now like this stuff's going away. So there are things that I think worked great in this new edit and things that I don't think worked great. And the odd thing is that the only things that didn't work great were your edits on their relationship. Every other edit that I think he did seemed to work. Oh, there's one thing I didn't like, but outside of that, everything else seemed to work really well.
It's almost like, you remember a few weeks ago where I said about going and editing music to make it right when it's
There
wrong.
You go.
It almost feels like this would be a case where you would want to sort of take all those versions and just do a little drop. I mean, you could do it in DaVinci, it wouldn't be hard, just to especially if it's really just that scene that just needs to be there. And then you've got a version which speaks to you, might not speak to Chris, but it certainly speaks to you. And I think it's a really interesting point in terms of that. You know, it does sound like I hadn't noticed that, but
Well, I got to tell you, I think my thing is this, if anybody does a fan edit, I think that'd be great, right? But much like fan edits of Star Wars films, you're going to have a million of them because everybody's going to take the bits that they like, right? And it's a very much personalized experience. I think if Chris just went back and put back the MSR stuff, the Mulder Scully relationship stuff, I think more people would be prone to check this out. I think he kind of tagged himself on that respect, I think,
He is a bit of a weird auteur like that, isn't he? So far, is that he will, because you're right. That is whether he likes it or not. That is what has catapulted. That's what catapulted the series to fame.
Absolutely.
Was that dynamic? And even though,
and look, the shippers are horrible to him. They have been for years. They call him the devil, and it's like this man created the characters that you love. Gillian Anderson is only in the show because he fought Fox, who wanted Pamela Anderson, and he told them Gillian Anderson's the right one, but he doesn't get credit for any of that. He's only the jerk for the things he did afterward, you know? So I kind of understand, like, if he's lashing back, I get it. I don't think it's the right thing. I get why he's doing it, right? But I don't think he should. But my point is that if he just put those things back in, I've seen it once now. Well, I've seen it once, but I watched the intro twice because I watched the intro to the original version. And then I watched this. I wanted to see, am I just thinking they're different? And no, they are. Right. But in any event, if he just put that relationship stuff back in, I think more people would have given it a chance. And I think a lot of people would actually find, oh, this actually is more coherent. It is tighter. It does tell. It feels more of an X-file than the original edit did, in my opinion. And yet, like you pointed out in the beginning, it's not vastly different. It's not a different movie. It's the same story. He didn't add an entire plot thread that's missing. He just kind of made it more coherent.
It's a weird beast for that because it's not reaching out to anyone else. I mean, you would not see the difference unless you knew the original film really well. I think that's fascinating about it. In a weird way,
I thought there was. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I would have perhaps wanted to have it, just keep the mold relationship stuff in. I think the kiss at the end, sorry, Christian, I would get rid of as well, because I think there is a tonal that sits oddly with the epilogue to the film, which is her going into surgery with this kid with, you know, will it work or will it not? It feels an odd up in a bit, which should feel kind of a little more, I don't know, mid-level, slightly tense still. So I get that. But the rest of it, you're right. I'd have kept it in. If it was me, given how badly the two series thing ended and the bad taste it had, that people had at the end of that, I'd have wanted to tweak this and made this like my final proper coda to the X-Files and sort of said to everyone, I've retweaked this. Obviously, I'm very proud of the two series, but this to me is like where the X-Files to me is my end moment, because it does, it's a beautiful film. I'd recommend watching, Christian. It's not going to blow your mind. There's nothing in it which is mind-blowing. The Victor Frankenstein stuff being done before. It's just the snow, the way it's shot, the pacing of it,
That's
there's a
it. It's
couple
a
of layers to
beautiful-looking
it.
film.
I prefer the first one in terms of the film. I find the first one actually quite a lot of fun, and it's not
Oh,
really,
yeah.
it's an adventure. While this one
Absolutely.
is far more sort of pulled back, far more interpretive, far more about the symbolic drives between all these main characters who want to believe for different reasons. It's a good film, and yeah, I just think it's really fascinating. And I suppose the final thing I would say on it is, unlike the Blade Runner, where you've got multiple cuts of Blade Runner, the original Blade Runner, which bugs me on the grounds of, well, there's two things. Oh, there's two. Oh, there's one coda I will go on this, but the first thing that bugs me about it is this, again, it's Ridley Scott's authorship which dominates it, rather than so the cut. While with the X-Files, Chris Carter was a writer as well as director, as well as the IP person. He has the right to kind of make these story, these changes, tweaks in that sort of context. In Blade Runner, it always bugs me because the screenwriters never agreed with Ridley Scott that Deckard was a replicant. Harrison Ford at the time didn't agree that he was a replicant, and the producer even went on to sort of say this was just a load of bullshit, which bullshit clever arty idea that made no sense within the story, that Ridley Scott wouldn't let go and has tried to feed into everyone. So in a sense, you feel like a bit like with Lucas, because Lucas did not write Empire Strikes Back. He didn't write Return of the Jedi, and yet he takes an authorial control over all three in those special editions. And again, you feel like these are not spaces. But I would also say, with I Want to Believe, to some degree, especially because I imagine Carter probably did speak to Spotnitz and the other people, because I always felt like that they were still, I don't know, but it feels like, I don't know, it feels more authentic in terms of what a director's cut is. But
I would also say too, the cuts to the Mulder Scully relationship do not erase the relationship in the film.
exactly. Absolutely. I think
They're
that's really
very
important.
much still a couple in the film. They're very much still together. They very much still love each other. All he did was cut some cutesy moments, if you will. And I think I can understand why, because he wanted the movie to have more of a focus on the scare. To be honest, when I walked away from this movie, I did feel like it felt more like an episode of the TV show, more like them working on a case, more like where we all grew to love them. So he didn't, much to your point about Blade Runner, he didn't change a narrative anywhere. So when everybody's complaining that the Mulder Scully relationship is removed, it's not. He didn't change the narrative on the relationship. He just showed us less of it. That's all. And I think that's why it still worked for me, is that this is still good. Again, like I said, there's that one edit with them in bed that I thought was weird. And then the only other thing that I found weird was the movie opens up with the X-Files sting. Just that, just the couple of notes of the theme. And then later on, they play it again over the George Bush joke. Well, in this new edit, they play the X-Files sting when they find the first arm, and it's out of place. It's out of place on the George Bush joke. It's out of place on the arm, and it really isn't needed at the beginning of the film either. When it starts playing at the end of the film is where it works best. So there were some oddities, but again, that's my personal experience.
But is this also another, I know we're probably going over on this, but is this also another question about director's power? Because when you're running a production, you've got all your units, all your production spaces working on their things with people in control of those spaces that will come back to you, but they'll control those spaces and do their creative things. When you're doing a director's cut, they're all kind of out, most likely. So when it comes down to things like, where you position stuff in the score, what works well in terms of the sound, I wonder how much there is of those sort of voices anymore to sort of
Well,
balance
I'll tell you
out your
what.
needs.
The reason he did this, according to him, is that there was pressure on him to drop the rating to PG-13 and pressure on him to add the Mulder Scully relationship from the studio. So there's arguments that maybe the studios should let the directors and the writers put their vision out there exactly as it is, because that's what you're paying them for. They're the storytellers, right? The studio shouldn't get so heavy-handed with what they see and change. We might have had this, I want to believe, in the theater back then. I personally don't 100% believe this is exactly what Chris meant in 2008, but we could have had something maybe closer to it, right?
But that's my point. But I mean, if he'd done the director's cut, the one he's just done with the entire production team, would it be a tighter, better thing than when it's done,
Oh.
where I'd imagine when this director cut has been done largely between him and a limited team who've gone
I would
back and
wager,
revisited and done things with him very much being the
yeah.
controlling voice. And I just
Well, you have to
wonder.
remember, go ahead.
Yeah, well, I mean, like Mark Snow was gone for a start, he's passed. So there's a lot of voices which would no longer be there to sort of balance out. I'm just thinking about, like, when you're talking about where the sting was placed, these quite sort of big things in terms of like where the flow and the tone of your music is something which is an exp which is a skill, is a musical skill, which you maybe not, that's what I mean. So I'm just, it's just
No, you're absolutely
fascinating that
right.
when we do these recuts for obvious reasons, for economic reasons, it's usually a very small team who get involved in them. And it's like we're going back to that whole thing, going back to that whole auteur theory thing that, you know, there isn't a single author in any of these projects, whether it's Alien, Blade Runner, Star Wars, X-Files. It's not a singular person. And yet, when it comes to these recut shoots or recuts, a singular person tends to be the one, not only is being given a medallion of you're the pawn who can do this, and we accept it. But also they think they're the ones who can do it or feel they can do it, but they don't have the team to anymore to revisit it and revision it, which is a
It's
shame.
interesting that you should say there isn't a single author, because quite literally, I Want to Believe has two writers. It's Frank Spotnitz and Chris Carter. Frank wasn't there for the re-edit of the film, although Chris spoke with him numerous times about it to like ask his opinion and this, that, and the other. And Frank told him, you can't cut the Mulder-Scully relationship scene.
Really?
They're going
That
to kill
does
you.
sound
You
like
can't
Frank.
do that. And he did end up cutting it anyway. So you're right. Now, mind you, he is also the director. He's not just the writer on this. Frank wasn't the director of the film. So does that give Chris more say? I don't know, but you're absolutely right. There was another writer right there, just like with the Ridley Scott example, telling him, no, don't do this. I don't think you should do that.
But
And it wasn't listened to.
I think that's the fascinating thing with Chris and Frank is having spoke to Frank years ago now quite a lot. I'd spoke to Chris a couple of times, but with Frank is a very, oh God, I've got to be careful how I say this. He's quite a sort of very human person, while Chris is very, very, very much a filmmaker, very much someone you perhaps can't
I
read as
see.
well. So I think the two of them together probably balance each other really well. You've got that sort of sense of artistic vision, and with Frank, you've got that sort of human pragmatism. And probably when you don't have that balance because of the way things are done, and one has more power than the other, even as you say, one is a director as well, so perhaps you have more power. I don't know, but it's
No.
interesting when the cool dynamic it shifts a bit, even if that's not for any nasty reason, just
Yeah.
practically. Does
Their
that?
stories in the show were some of the best, so they definitely are a great team
They're
together.
great.
But I guess when one side isn't listening to the other,
Or can't because the other one's busy or
or
whatever.
overpowering. Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, they're both brilliant people, most incredible artists in their right.
What interested me listening to James and Brian wasn't really whether Carter's new cut was better. It was the question underneath it. Nearly 20 years later, whose film is it to change? Because the film isn't actually made by one person. There's probably no definitive answer here. A director's cut can bring something closer to one person's original intention, but that doesn't necessarily make it the definitive version, particularly when dozens or hundreds of other people contributed to the thing being revised. And perhaps that's why the Chris Carter example is so interesting. The old, I want to believe, hasn't disappeared. You can still disagree with the director and watch the version you prefer. James McLean and Brian Terranova were with me. I'm Christian Corley. If you've enjoyed this edition of Cast Debris, make sure you've subscribed wherever you get your podcasts, and please leave us a rating or review if you can. You can also follow Cast Debris on Substack for the podcast, articles, and updates, or support us on Patreon, where you'll get access to the Cast Debris archive, including exclusive videos, interviews, and material from more than 20 years of Casturbers. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon.